Arts Movement Radio. Women's Movement Radio. Welcome to Women's Movement Radio Show. I'm your host, Janae Eisenstrauss. I would love to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to our show today. As always, I will be speaking to women all over the world about their business, love, and lifestyle, bringing you inspiration, motivation, by always aspiring to keep you informed, inspired, and incredibly successful. We have a great show planned for all of you today. When we return, we're going to be talking about the evolution of the Jewish woman. Are you a woman who is serious about starting an online business that will allow you to create sustainable wealth and growth? Well, we've done the research. Let us introduce you to some of the best business professionals that have researched numerous business concepts and provide you with great free advice for developing a sustainable business online. Visit us at womensbusinesssourceonline.com. As I stated before the break, today we're going to be talking about the evolution of the Jewish woman. The role of women in traditional Judaism has been grossly misrepresented and misunderstood. The position of women is not nearly as lowly as many modern people think. In fact, the position of women in halakha, Jewish law, that dates back to the biblical period is in many ways better than the position of women under civil American law. As recently as a century ago, many important feminist leaders of the 20th century, Gloria Steinem, for example, and Betty Friedan, are Jewish women, and some commentators have suggested that this is no coincidence. The respect accorded to Jewish women is a part of the tradition and the part of the ethnic culture. The rights of women in traditional Judaism are much greater than they were in the rest of Western civilization until the 20th century. Women had the right to buy, sell, and own property, and make their own contracts, rights women in Western countries, including America, did not have until 100 years ago. In fact, in Proverbs 31:10, which is traditionally read at a Jewish wedding, and for those who practice orthodoxy at every Shabbat or Shabbos dinner, speaks repeatedly of business acumen as a trait to be prized in a woman. Women have the right to be consulted with regard to their marriage. Marital sex is regarded as the woman's right in Judaism, not the man's. That was one of the draws for me to start exploring my personal heritage. However, I will keep this clean for Rabbi Yonah. Men do not have the right to beat or mistreat their wives. And interestingly, this right wasn't recognized as a law in many Western countries until a few hundred years ago. Well, our next guest coming on our show is going to offer the male perspective of the evolution of women in Judaism, Rabbi Yonah, who is the founder of Jewlicious and author of Prayers for Israel, is a modern Orthodox rabbi with progressive views on the evolution of Jewish women. When we return, we'll be back to talk to Rabbi Yonah about business, love, and lifestyle. Life Masters Now Success Coaching was designed to provide you with the necessary resources for you to master your life right now. We can show you how to make transformational changes in your life and business. Let us teach you how to move forward in progression, prosperity, and power. Visit us at lifemastersnow.com. And we're back now. I'm so excited to introduce our guest, Rabbi Yonah. He is the founder of an organization called Jewlicious that empowers young Jewish people to be connected to their heritage and their Jewish community. And he's also the founder and author of a book called Prayers for Israel. Hi, Rabbi. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the radio show.
Thank you so much for accepting coming on Women's Movement Radio Show. I wanted to have you on the show to talk about how Jewish women have evolved in modern day culture. And how do you think Jewish women have progressed up until this day?
Well, it's a very big topic. I think that Jewish women have always been the basis for Jewish life. Without a Jewish home and without the spiritual leadership of Jewish women, the Jewish community probably wouldn't exist. It's only because of the dedication of Jewish wives and mothers and the raising of children with a eye towards the Jewish future that we can even have a conversation today.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I do agree that it is such a broad topic. Have you found, how would you say this is applied in Orthodox culture? Because meanwhile, let's talk about Orthodox culture, because I think the greatest evolution has probably taken place with the women within that particular sect.
You know that the Jewish women's movement within the greater evolution of modern Jewry has brought women into positions of leadership which were traditionally not available to them. Once upon a time, the roles were very strictly defined between public and private, and women controlled the private sphere, and men were the ones who occupied the public sphere. And that's all changed within the last 20 years. There's been a huge turnover in that realm. And Jewish women, Jewish Orthodox women, have taken it more and more of a pronounced, you know, of a public role in the Jewish community. This is a reflection of two things. One, which is the greater evolution of women's roles in Judaism in general, which is found in all the movements, which started, you know, with the women's movement in the 1960s. And the other reason is because men are more willing to see Jewish women as an integral part of the Jewish community and its functioning.
Well, you know what's interesting, Rabbi Yonah, is that through my evolution, and I think I shared with you briefly before how I discovered my background.
Right.
But one of the things that I just did discover is how in Judaism was one of the religions that I've studied that it really exalts the woman. It exalts her role. It almost comes across as being very matriarchal in nature. Now, meanwhile, I know that it's probably a balance of both matriarchal and patriarchal roles, but I think, do you find within Judaism that there's very defined roles for men and women?
I think that historically the roles have been more solidly defined, and that today there's a real push, and it's not just from the women's, from women. It's also a push from men to have more of a communal society of the Jewish community, which is more inclusive of women. And as far as your comment about matriarchal, I think this is a really interesting point. Judaism has never disparaged women. And ever since the starting of the Jewish people, the role of the matriarchs and the Jewish women who were prophets and leaders within the Jewish community has always been something which has been lauded. We speak about the matriarchs in the same breath that we speak about the patriarchs, those who helped found the Jewish people back in ancient days. And interestingly, within many Jewish communities, and I'm most familiar with the Jewish communities of Eastern Europe, where my family is from, Jewish women were the ones who ran businesses, who helped to promote culture, but they never took that public role. And I think that the other thing I want to say about in matriarchal community is within the Orthodox world, Judaism is passed along through the mother. It's not through the father. Jewish women have a power to own property. They run businesses. They have great protection in marriage. They're not considered chattel. And the Torah guarantees a great amount of autonomy for Jewish women, which is not found in many other, let's call it, Orthodox traditions from other religions.
Yeah, I agree with you with that. And our ketubah, I think, is a perfect example of that, the level of security and protection that women do have.
Precisely. I like to tell people who are preparing for marriage that the Jewish people guaranteed the rights of women before that concept even came about within the, you know, within the ancient culture.
So when you think about marriage and Judaism, what would you say, what is the difference now with Jewish women being married compared to, let's even go back 30 years ago in modern culture? And when I'm talking about culture, I'm looking at in the Orthodox community, like the evolution of privilege that Jewish women have now compared to then.
In order to, you know, to approach that subject, I'd say we have to look also at the evolution of Judaism within the last 100 to 150 years within the Orthodox community. The Orthodox Jewish community has grown and diversified greatly since the turn of the last century. And you have various streams, as I mentioned when we were preparing for the interview, that one of the streams follows a concept that a Jewish person needs to be grounded both in the Torah world and in their spiritual background, but also in the secular world. They have to have a command of both of these arenas. A more conservative element within the Orthodox world steered away from that and had, until this day, has maintained a strict division between the Jewish world and the secular world. They've erected great protection so that the secular world doesn't encroach upon the Jewish world. The modern Orthodox community, of which I am a part of, has always seen a great amount of value in being part of secular culture. Let's bring back 30 to 40 years within the modern Orthodox world. I think that one of the big changes has been in women's role in choosing a mate. Once upon a time, and I'm not going back very long, a woman went along with her family's recommendation on who to marry. That no longer the guiding principle within the modern Orthodox community. Women have as much of a say in who they're going to marry as a boy does, and parental guidance is only one of the factors. The women's role in choosing a mate has really evolved. Once upon a time, women went to, according to their family's background. Today, you find that women are empowered to choose who they're going to marry, and that is, it's a profound and major change in the role of women in Jewish life. Now, within the more conservative side, if we're going towards the Satmar, the Haredi areas, they have not adopted that. And many women will follow their family's recommendation of who they're going to marry.
Well, I'm just going to go back to two things. I want us to, for our listeners, just to define the difference between the more conservative being the Haredi, and then you and I talked about like the Lubavitch and the modern modern Orthodoxy, so that way they understand the differentiation. And then I also want to talk about the term that we usually use for when there is an arranged marriage, and I'm hoping that I'm pronouncing this right because I've heard different pronunciations, is what it's called, a shidduch.
So historically,
yeah,
the word shidduch did refer to an arranged marriage. Today, the word shidduch refers to any engagement of a young Jewish man and woman. Once upon a time when these marriages were arranged, so you had two families negotiating a shidduch between the children. Today, shidduch within the ultra-Orthodox world, the Haredi world, that's still very prevalent in how young people are paired up. The shidduch is arranged by the parents. In the Lubavitch community, there is more flexibility. While parents might recommend, there's still some flexibility. You see the Chabad more leaning towards a modern observance. And then once you get to the modern Orthodox world, the parents' involvement in the shidduch. My wife, for example, mm-hmm. We did not go through a matchmaker. We did not go through our parents. We met at a social function, and we decided to date and eventually decided to marry. And it was only after we decided to marry and got engaged that we really got to know each other's parents. And this is a huge change, a sea change within modern Orthodoxy. The young people have a much bigger role in saying who they're going to marry. And this is exemplifies the roles that have evolved within the Jewish community, you know, of young people and certainly of women's empowerment within the Orthodox community. There still are matchmakers out there, but instead of the matchmakers pairing up families, a lot of the matchmakers are just busy pairing up young people who meet with the matchmakers on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And with the advent of websites, so there are several websites dedicated to Orthodox Jews. There's something called JWed, and there's something called Saw You at Sinai.
Now, you talked about the different websites. And now, one of the things that I mentioned in my introduction for you is that you actually started a movement that caters to young Jewish people to learn about their community and their heritage. And it's called Jewlicious. I'd like to know more about that. And is that a global movement that you've created?
Well, because of the internet and because of social media, Jewlicious has had a chance to really have an influence in general on how the Jewish community reaches out to young people. Jewlicious, which started 9 years ago, was at the forefront of an effort to make available Jewish heritage and Jewish community to people outside of that milieu. Because of great assimilation of young Jews, many found themselves disconnected from the Jewish community, alienated from it. They didn't have a firm rooting within the Jewish world, and for that, they started to drift away. Jewlicious identified this along with others, but came up with really creative ways of dealing with it through festivals and websites and social media and these kind of very new technologies. We've been able to have a very broad influence. We're based in Los Angeles and in Jerusalem, but our reach is really global.
Wow, that's great. You touched upon the connection and a lot of young people feeling disassociated from their Judaism. Would you not say that's a part of a much larger societal problem, whereas the younger generations of parents we've become more liberal, I find. So since we've become more liberal, we've taken on more of a secular ideology in terms of we're not going to necessarily instill, if I could say, the values of Hashem on our children. Meanwhile, we may still implement them in our observing our high holidays and operating in that format, but we may not necessarily be living our day-to-day lives as what we would call in a so-called religious format. So I almost find like the young people, they feel disconnected because their parents are not living and operating in that. Even if they're living culturally Jewish, they're not living their everyday lives according to the practices, the traditional practices of Judaism.
Well, you put your finger on one of the big problems. It started a couple of generations ago. Once upon a time, I'm sorry to use that phrase, but it happened that the young Jews were forced by society to be connected to the Jewish community. There wasn't that openness. There wasn't an ability to blend into society at large. Jews were born Jews. They were born into a tight-knit community, and they stayed Jewish because of that tight-knit community, and they were not accepted outside of it. Once Jews began to be accepted regardless of their spiritual background and regardless of their orientation. So this allowed Jewish people to blend into the society more. And the fact that young Jews began to be raised with less and less Jewish identity has had a detrimental effect on the Jewish world as a whole. And you're very right. The cultural representation of Judaism is a weak and unsustainable way of passing on tradition. If you only go to the high holidays, you know, you're being Jewish twice a year, then how much of a connection can you really have to your Jewish heritage and certainly your spiritual heritage? A rabbi, a teacher of mine said, and I was speaking with him recently, he said, Judaism's not a spectator sport. But unfortunately, for a lot of Jews, Judaism became a spectator sport and they drifted away. They weren't involved in day-to-day Jewish life. They lacked a strong Jewish education. They lacked a strong Jewish family basis. And that has resulted in enormous assimilation. And I call it the disappearing generation. We have a whole decade to two decades of young people who are completely alienated from Jewish life.
Well, I think it's also, that's one of the issues. I think the other issue is that we should talk about is the intermarriage aspect too, because in our culture, we have a lot of, and obviously since most of us are not in Israel and being such a large global population, and on a whole, because a lot of listeners, I don't know if you know this, but Jews probably make up 20 million out of the 7 billion people that are on this earth. And they don't real. People think that, oh, well, I see Jewish people on television. I see them in media. At the end of the day, there's just not a lot of us out there at all. So one of the things is intermarriage, I think, is also another aspect that has become a problem, because going back to what you said before is that in Judaism, it follows the mother. So if a Jewish woman actually marries a man that may not be ideal, but if she marries a man that happens not to be Jewish, if my understanding is that the children are still considered Jewish. However, if the man marries out, he may marry a woman that is not Jewish. And then therefore, if that woman now does not go through the process of conversion, and even even within the Reform movement, that was partially why the Reform movement came on place, was still to keep a lot of the Jewish culture and making it a little bit easier for people that were non-Jewish to convert into Judaism. But even they say like the percentage is like maybe a quarter of the people that do marry somebody that is Jewish that are not Jewish, maybe a quarter of them actually go through conversion. What do you think about those statistics?
I think they might even be greater. In Southern California, we have an intermarriage rate above 50%.
Wow.
And that is people who are not converting. So if you're looking at the numbers of conversions, especially within the Reform community, you probably have a good 20 to 25% who are converting, but the vast majority are not. And the Reform movement's response has been recently that they're recognizing patrilineal descent because they want to be as inclusive as possible. They don't want to, you know, alienate young people whose parents were not both Jewish. And so they've opened up this floodgate of issues regarding conversion. Within the Orthodox community, matrilineal descent is still the only way to pass it on. And as you mentioned, even if a woman marries a non-Jewish fellow, the children are considered Jewish. And because of the way Jewish life is set up, there's just greater chance that the children are going to have a Jewish identity if the mother's Jewish. When the father's Jewish, the chances that the children will maintain that Jewish identity is statistically much, much lower. The Jewish women are empowered by that. They are the ones who pass on the Jewishness, and they're the ones who pass on the spiritual and cultural connections to the Jewish people. One more thing I want to mention about this is that intermarriage at one time was considered totally taboo. Even in the 1950s, we're not going back so far, mm-hmm. Marriage was very taboo. And as the decades have passed until now, intermarriage is not considered taboo at all. It's just considered part of the way of life. And if they marry Jewish, great. If they don't marry Jewish, let's hope for the best.
Have you found in different parts of the world where there is Jewish influence, have you not found that some of the rules regarding marriage have changed? Like, interestingly, I found that Israel, the actual state, they're probably a lot more liberal in some aspects than we are here in North America.
When Israel was founded, it was founded as a secular state. And the people who were the main builders of the state were secular. And consequently, the majority of Jews in Israel don't define themselves as Orthodox. They define themselves as Israeli, culturally Jewish. Doesn't mean that they don't know about Jewish heritage and Jewish religion and Jewish culture. They all learn that growing up, but they're very secular. And there's a lot of resentment, growing resentment, I should say, within the secular community in Israel of the influence of the Orthodox community. One of the things that David Ben-Gurion, one of the founders of the State of Israel, put into place was he said that the secular life of the communities in Israel were going to be governed secularly without religious oversight. But when it came to birth, death, marriage, all those things were going to be controlled by a chief rabbinate. There was more and more resentment within Israel, unfortunately, towards the chief rabbinate and the role of orthodoxy within the Jewish life. And there's huge, there is a movement afoot to reduce the influence of the Orthodox influence over matters of marriage and birth and death within Israel. And there are Jewish couples who leave the country to get married. A Jewish couple can have a recognized marriage in Israel is through the chief rabbinate. This presents a lot of safeguards for the integrity of the Jewish family, but it is no longer considered desirable by a growing population of young secular Israelis.
Well, we talked about the State of Israel, and you have a book out called Prayers for Israel. I just wanted to actually quote a section that you talked about here. Is it by you or Rabbi Shmuley on your website? Prayers for Israel is an important for anyone who cares about Israel and the Holy Land. Rabbi Yonah Bonstein helps us speak to God about Israel in a new, powerful way. He echoes the eternal words of the prophet Zechariah, not by military force and not by physical strength, but by my spirit. Can we safeguard the land of Israel? Rabbi Shmuley Botek, author of The Fed Up Man. And he's quite powerful and influential, and especially in the media forefront for Judaism. Why don't you tell us about Prayers for Israel?
I have been involved in Israel advocacy for two decades. And within the realm of Israel advocacy as an American, much of that was relegated to promoting Israel, to educating people about Israel, to taking on people who were extremely anti-Israel through protests, through protesting in favor of Israel, and many kinds of Israel advocacy. But one of the places that I realized that we have a great vacuum within the Jewish community is a spiritual connection to advocacy to Israel. And when I started exploring some of our Jewish sources, Psalms, the Hasidic masters, and other Jewish ancient sources, like the prophets that Shmuley quotes there, I realized that we've forgotten one of our most powerful ways to advocate for Israel, which is through prayer and through connecting with God. And I looked around in English, and there was nothing there where an English, you know, English-speaking person, somebody who was not familiar with Hebrew, could in their daily life include prayers for Israel. As the situation in the Middle East has gotten more precarious for the Jewish state, I realize that now is the time to put these prayers together, to come up with new prayers, to put them together with Psalms and the writings of Hasidic masters, and to create this prayer book so that people could connect to Israel spiritually. This is, in my opinion, this is a very important step within Israel advocacy, because ultimately, as the prophets foretold, our safeguarding of Israel is not going to be through the strength of the Israeli military, however strong it is, but it's really going to be having God on our side, on having God recognize that we care about Israel, and therefore God helping to preserve and protect Israel.
Well, I agree with that, and I do agree with one of the things that you stated about how we've forgotten, because even if we go back and look at Moshe, and he was known as one of the greatest intercessors between us and Hashem, and I think that we need to come back to that. Obviously, military force or the system that we're operating under now is not, it hasn't been that effective, because we're still, and obviously you and I both know it's a lot more complicated, but.
Sure, and part of prayers for Israel is praying for peace and praying for a peaceful resolution of all of the conflicts within the Middle East. Nobody's advocating for a violent resolution. We want to preserve life. Judaism's about preserving life.
Mm-hmm.
It's about living. It's not about martyrdom or death. And so part of prayers for Israel is praying for a peaceful resolution. We beseech God, let's solve the Middle Eastern problems peacefully. Let people get along. Let's find ways of safeguarding each of our, each of the communities so that they can pursue life, liberty, and the and happiness like we have here in the United States.
Now, have you found there are any women groups that are at the forefront of the preservation of Israel?
There is a 100 years ago called Hadassah. Hadassah was founded by American Jewish women who felt that they needed to be a voice and a support for Israel outside of the regular channels within the Jewish community. And it really is a revolutionary kind of an organization. Jewish women were empowered to be supporters of the state of Israel in and of themselves. They raised money, they founded hospitals, they created youth movements, and they've really inspired young Jewish women to be connected. I know that my wife is a lifetime member, my mother's a lifetime member, her mother was a lifetime member.
Yep.
And it's a beautiful organization dedicated to supporting Israel and the people of Israel.
Now, Rabbi Yonah, just before you leave us, is there anything that you want to offer to Jewish women or the women listening of inspiration around the topic that we talked about, progression? I'm not just for the Jewish women, but for all women.
There's a great misconception that Judaism is a patriarchal religion and that women's place was relegated to the back burner. Truthfully, built into Jewish religion, spirituality, and cultural life, women have a very important and prominent role. And they should not be disenchanted with traditional Judaism to think that women are somehow second-class citizens. It's true that we don't have women rabbis within Orthodoxy, but the growing influence of Jewish women teachers has really created an atmosphere where Jewish women and Jewish men have an equal role in the perpetuation of the Jewish community. And I'll point to a couple of proofs of that. One was the founding of the Beis Yaakov movement in Poland. Now, Beis Yaakov at the time said Jewish women need to have a Jewish education which is as strong as Jewish men. When it was founded in the 1920s, that was a radical concept. Today, the fact that Jewish women study as diligently and in such a high level of education is taken for granted within the Jewish community. So that's been a huge seed within the Orthodox Jewish community, and it shows the evolution of the role of women within the Orthodox community. Now, for a family to not send their daughter to a very intensive Jewish education, they would be frowned upon. Whereas 100 years ago, that was not the case. Jewish women are and will continue to be the most important part of Jewish culture, because they can guarantee a Jewish home. And the Jewish home is what guarantees, no matter what is going on within the outside world, if we don't have a strong Jewish home, we won't have a strong Jewish people.
Well, Rabbi Yonah, I'd love to thank you for being on Women's Movement Radio Show today.
It's been an honor, and thank you so much for this opportunity to speak to your listeners. And I wish you great success within your movement and radio show and all the things that you're doing.
Thank you.
Mom's Movement Radio Show on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. with me, your host, Janae Eisenstrauss, where we will talk to moms all around the world about business, love, and lifestyle. Join us and be a part of a movement of moms who are changing their lives by force. I am so thankful I had the wonderful opportunity to speak with Rabbi Yonah today. Rabbi Yonah, thank you for gracing us with your presence. I'm glad that I got to speak about my heritage that I'm still discovering daily. Now, I know many of you listening know that I'm Jewish, but I never shared my evolutionary process on what it took for me to discover my heritage. I will save that for another show, but what I will say is that for me, being a Jewish woman gives me a strong sense of identity. It is an opportunity to create my own legacy. I think about, what do we want this role to mean to our daughters and to us? How will the Sarah Rachels and Rebeccas and Leahs of ancient times influence the Sarahs, Rachels, and Rebeccas and Leahs of now? The thread of being a Jewish woman links us to our ancestors as we take on this legacy. And when I think on these things, I am filled with a great sense of gratitude, which I can't help but express. And I want to thank you, Hashem, for everything that you've given to me, and I will serve as a light to uplift and empower women everywhere by your grace. On that note, ladies, I want to thank all of you for listening to Women's Movement Radio Show today. I'm your host, Janae Eisenstrauss. Join me here on Tuesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, never forget, be informed, be inspired, be incredibly successful. You're now listening to WMRN.